All right, welcome, folks. We are joined by none other than Dane Wigington, who agreed to join us on a kind of an emergency basis here because of what's just happened with Hurricane Ian. And, of course, Dane Wigington is the founder of geoengineeringwatch.org. Extraordinary man, extraordinary individual. He's been sounding the alarm on the destruction of the biosphere, and we did an interview a couple weeks ago that was just bombshell. Mr. Wigington, I just want to thank you so much for joining me tonight. It's great to have you back.
Well, Mike, it's always a pleasure. And again, the same gratitude to you and your organization and all you're doing to help pull back the curtain and expose the insanity.
Well, we are all certainly subjected to massive insanity each and every day. So let's just jump right into this. I was watching the actual live tracking of Hurricane Ian as it entered the kind of the southwestern shoreline of Florida, and then it moved in, and then it stopped, and then it took a turn to the east, like a sharp turn, like it had a turn signal on or something, and then it stopped, and then it hovered, and then it moved around, and then it decided to go north. And I'm thinking, I gotta call you and find out, like, because this is crazy, this is not natural looking. And you told me off the recording that that's correct. So go ahead. What have you noticed about the storm track, and was it weaponized and so on?
Within a few minutes, we'll send you the link to the recordings of the frequency transmissions that are used to repel the storm in different directions. That's how it's steered. And we have the actual recordings of that in real time while it's happening, maneuvering that storm. Same thing happens with so many other storms, Mike. You remember Hurricane Sandy, that they knew 7 days in advance was going to make an unprecedented left westerly turn. Remember that?
Yeah.
And they can't know things like that unless that is actually the scheduled weather, unless they have the means to actually manipulate the storms, and they do. And Mike, if you didn't see it, in the case of Hurricane Ian, it was just a drifting mass of unorganized convection. And that makes the storms much easier for them to steer until it gets closer to the land-based transmitters. So until it got south of Cuba, it basically was completely unorganized. And then with ionosphere heaters, they can affect the convection that allows the storm to start forming and strengthening, which it did right before it hit Cuba. As it migrated northward by the southern end of Florida, the transmitter in Key West is part of the NextRad transmitter network. And again, this will all be shown on the video we're about to send you. We'll post in a few minutes at geoengineeringwatch.org. But that transmitter, again, with the repelling effect, when they saturate the air mass full of electrically conductive particles, that's part of climate engineering, those particles can be moved and repelled by the transmissions. If you're repelling the particles that are saturating that air mass, you repel the air mass, thus you repel the storm. And they can, in this way, maneuver those storms, steer them where they want to go. They de-energize the transmitters on the side that they want the storm to migrate to, so they're not being repelled. It's right. Very, very clear on the transmission, on the video that we'll be sending you shortly.
So they can, in essence, by having a measured transmission of the repelling force, what you're saying is they could, in essence, freeze the movement of the storm and just let it hover and sit over a certain area while it's dropping, 2 feet of rain. Like they can do that.
Exactly. You're exactly correct. That's a perfect interpretation. Exactly what they did in the case of Hurricane Harvey, that they knew 7 days in advance would end up where it ended up and stay there, precipitating 50 inches of rain. And we recorded that event also. Geoengineeringwatch.org, Hurricane Harvey. Your listeners can see that interaction of the frequencies with the storm. So your interpretation is exactly correct, Mike.
Now, let's bring in this next fact, because in the last interview that you and I did, and for any listeners, if you missed that, you've got to check that out. It was an extraordinary interview. And Dane and I, both being scientifically minded individuals who have a lot of knowledge, I think we really were able to get in depth on a lot of issues. But we talked about food scarcity and engineered drought, crop failures, and so on. So one of the things that just popped up with this hurricane is that it was a direct hit, and it hovered over the area of Central Florida that is used by a company called Mosaic, which is responsible for producing 50% of the pelletized phosphate fertilizer for all of North America, and they provide 12% of the phosphate fertilizers for the entire world. So if you wanted to destroy the crop supply, folks, I mean, you know, NPK, nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium. So nitrogen, you shut down by shutting down pipelines in Europe and Russia. And then phosphate is what's being shut down now by this hurricane in Florida. Dane, did you notice that this was targeting or seemingly hovering right over this massive phosphate production or a pelletized phosphorus fertilizer facility? Did you notice that?
We did, thankfully, to your post that brought that to our attention, Mike. So thank you for that. And again, yeah, it was held in place there in the transmission recordings will reveal that. And in other places, in addition to cutting off the supply chains for fertilizers, there's other factors that no one in the science community except geoengineeringwatch.org is discussing. Other ways that they are able to shut down crops, for example, on the West Coast, these desiccant particles are so effective at drying out atmospheric RH, atmospheric relative humidity, that all the fertilizer in the world here on the West Coast wouldn't make any difference because we have not only the drought conditions, not only the toxic particles in the precipitation that are killing soil microbiome, affecting root systems, but we have VPD, vapor pressure deficit. It is so dry here that the organisms, be it crops or trees, can't open their stomata, the respiratory ports, in order to feed on carbon, thus to grow, release oxygen. They can't do that because they're trying to retain their moisture because the atmospheric RH relative humidity is so low. It's called vapor pressure deficit, massive factor that's completely stunting the growth of trees and crops. So we have multiple factors in the equation, certainly.
Now, what would you say to someone listening to this who's skeptical about the things that you and I have just mentioned here? Let's say that somebody stumbles onto this interview and says, no, what are you talking about? It's just nature. It's just a natural hurricane, or it's a natural drought, or it's a natural flood, or, you know, the typical media push is that, well, it's climate change, and therefore we have to shut down, you know, human civilization, I guess, or something. But what would you say to somebody who's skeptical about this upon hearing what we're saying?
Two-layered question. On the first part of that question, it would be comparable to arguing that it's some natural event, would be comparable to, as an example I've used on many of my Global Alert News broadcasts, if you found a body in the street that had been stabbed, beaten, run over, shot, burnt, and you tried to claim they died of a heart attack, you'd have a hard time making that argument. In regard to the climate change groups and narratives, none are legitimate unless or until they address climate intervention first and foremost. It is the single most destructive human activity of all, greatest and most immediate threat we collectively face short of nuclear cataclysm. And it's much, much more than just climate engineering, aka weather warfare. As you know, more than most anybody on the planet, that the elements coming down in our precipitation that we're all inhaling, known toxic elements, aluminum, barium, strontium, manganese, polymer fibers, graphene, and some of these elements, polymer fibers and graphene, are capable of acting as biological carriers to disperse a pathogen from the cloud to the ground. So the amount of threats that are contained in what's happening in our skies are legion.
Well, what's extraordinary too, Dane, is that these seemingly weaponized systems are targeting effectively civilian infrastructure. So normally in a time of war, especially let's look back at World War II, you had the war machines of, let's say, Germany versus the war machines of the British or the Russians or you know, the Allies, America, what have you, or the French. And it was war targets versus war targets or military targets versus military targets. Now, the civilian infrastructure that keeps people alive is being targeted by war, sort of weaponization of natural dynamics, or I should say, I don't even know what's the best way to do this, to say this, but weaponization of the weather system. So they take a system that does exist, and then they tweak it in a way that weaponizes it, but they're targeting civilian infrastructure. So this is so far beyond traditional warfare. This is hitting people for mass starvation, famine, dislocation. what does this mean about the globalist plan? I'm almost at a loss of words here, but isn't this kind of an all-out assault on human existence?
It is. And I think what populations, especially in the U.S., need to understand is that because so many are armed and we have more freedoms than those in other parts of the world, that the population of the U.S. is not only expendable to those in power, but a radically and rapidly increasing liability. And that needs to be understood. That's why we have, as I think we've discussed before, Zbigniew Brzezinski, presidential advisor from Johnson all the way to 2017, stating with today's technology, it's easier for the controllers to kill a million people than to control them. So the populations that think those in power are there to protect their health, their welfare, their posterity, that could not be further from the truth. And that should be painfully obvious at this point, shouldn't it?
Yes. Yes. What is your prognosis for the food supply in 2023 and a couple of years beyond that, you know, just based on the fertilizer disruptions that we've already talked about here, plus the drought and the geoengineering attacks on the biosphere? What do you think? And I don't mean for third world countries. I mean for America. What are Americans likely to experience in terms of food scarcity or inflation or what have you?
Mass starvation. And what's important for people to understand, they've been trained, taught, programmed to believe that such equations are linear, that you can gauge them out into the future based on how they've developed in the past. It could not be further from the truth. The equation we face couldn't be more nonlinear. And we are at the breaking point of so many systems. So you add the lack of fertilizer from the supply chain breakdowns, you add the UV radiation that's bombarding the planet now, not just exponentially high UVB, but UVC. You add the toxins in the rain that's affecting microbiome, root systems, vapor pressure deficit, where they're desiccating the skies and absorbing all the atmospheric moisture. You can't grow almost anything in California right now. They're tearing out orchards with excavators. Empty food shelves are right around the corner, Mike.
Why is it that this is so obvious to yourself and to me as well, most of our audience, and actually anybody paying attention? If you start projecting out the fertilizer supply and soil conditions and atmospheric conditions and so on, you know, the chart of food supply falls off a cliff in 2023, but yet most people are operating as if somehow there's going to be a magical solution. Why do you think that is?
Normalcy bias has been fed in this country to a degree that can scarcely be believed. People are trained that somehow if they just ignore things long enough that everything will magically work out. That could not be further from the truth. And those in power are doing everything they can to keep the population completely oblivious to the oncoming train until the moment of impact. And that moment draws perilously near.
So let me ask you about the radiation factor in all of this. There's a lot of concern that there could be some kind of nuclear weapons deployed by one side or the other in Europe. There's a lot of movement. State Department has warned Americans, get out of Russia. Russia's defense minister, Medvedev, I think that's it. I have trouble with the Russian names. But he's warning that Russia has a posture of being quick to jump to any weapon system they want if they feel like they're being attacked and so on. What would happen in your research, Dane, because I know you've done extensive research, if you take all the problems that we've talked about so far and then you add radioactive fallout spread through the jet stream, all the winds circling across the northern hemisphere, what would that do to our system?
Game over. You have immediate destruction of what's left of the ozone layer. That by itself is an ELE, extinction level event. And the fallout then, the half-life, soil's ramifications, water's ramifications, that is an absolute certain game over scenario. And those in power, as we've discussed before, based on psychoanalysis, seem to lack the comprehension to consider the consequences of their actions, even to themselves. We're dealing now with a headless, heartless, soulless cancer in many arenas that will do anything to retain that power until the brutal bitter end. And that draws near. We need to have a mass awakening. Populations need to focus on priorities. If we don't deal with the greatest and most immediate threats, starting with what's happening in our skies, because we can't escape that. We can escape the jab. We can escape other factors, but we have to breathe. We're sucking up these materials. They can lace those materials with whatever they want. We have to deal with that first, the onslaught to the planet's life support systems from climate engineering as well. And then we have to start focusing on other issues. But we need populations to understand that we are in a real-time fight for life right now. And Mike, also, as I know you've been observing, the attack on the Nord Stream pipelines completely eclipsed by Hurricane Ian. And that's just one more layer of how those events serve those in power. Many, many agendas likely being carried out all at once.
Yeah, really good point. The timing of that is highly suspicious. But let me ask you a follow-up question on what you just said. These globalists, I don't know, the elite, wealthy, politically connected people, from other sources I have and other interviews I've done, we know that these individuals are, they are stockpiling massive underground bunkers, so-called dumbs, deep underground military bases, old abandoned missile silos they've turned into, you know, like multi-story underground apartment systems and so on. They think that whatever is being unleashed that will kill off much of humanity and maybe what you described, extinction level event, they think that they can just live underground for a year or two and then reemerge and then, oh, it's all going to be green and beautiful again. What's wrong with that thinking on their part from your view, Dane?
That's a really important question. So let's put this into context with the most comparable events in Earth's geologic past. It's called the PETM event, the Paleocene-Eocene Thermal Maximum, 55 million years ago, mass extinction event that parallels what's happening today, again, with climate engineering being a massive factor in what's happening today. But what's happening now is happening mathematically hundreds of times faster than that event from 55 million years ago, again, the last mass extinction. The equilibrium period after that extinction, and the one we're in now, is far worse. Equilibrium period, 10 to 20 million years. That's a long time to stay underground, isn't it?
Well, maybe not if they're zombies or Dracula or something. Maybe they can hibernate for, like undead creatures for a while and then emerge someday, like in the Thriller video by Michael Jackson or something. I mean, obviously that's satire on my part, but yeah, it's kind of like we're living under the control of a suicide cult. And they think that they can just conveniently destroy the surface of the planet, let everybody die off, and then that they're going to reemerge and reclaim Earth and everything's going to be great. And it just doesn't work that way.
It doesn't. And I there are many that are in that category, I believe, that feel somehow they're going to ride this out. There are many others, the disaster capitalists. And this throws a lot of people's perceptions and conclusions off. They think if someone's making money off of this, there must be a way out of it. But I would argue again, the disaster capitalist will do what they do because that's who they are. It's to compare them with pirates on the deck of a sinking ship, filling their pockets with loot. How much good will that do them when they go to the bottom with the ship? And that's what we face. We have too many people that have, again, been too completely programmed to comprehend the totality of what's unfolding. And we have to change course. We have to stop this interference with the planet's life support systems. As you know, with your background, the pharmaceutical approach for planet Earth and all the pharmaceutical commercials we see take this for a certain symptom, and you hear, again, all the side effects. And it's so horrific. You wonder who in the world would take that product. But it's that mentality that's being dished onto planet Earth right now. If it continues, we're done.
Well, and what you're getting at here is, I think, a description of a structural vulnerability, that the very structure of capitalism as it is pursued, which, by the way, is almost fascism because it's so tied into government and it's a lot of monopolism and kleptocrats are involved and so on. It's not even really a free market system. But nevertheless, the way it's operated today, it can't help but commit suicide in order to maximize profits. In other words, there's no incentive to not self-destruct. It's like, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, you're completely correct. Continue. I mean, but you're completely correct. There's no rationally arguing what you just stated.
Well, yeah, and especially, you know, investors look at quarterly profits and they look at the balance sheet, and the only thing that matters to them are the numbers on this balance sheet. Oh, cash flows in, cash flows out, and you know, profits and losses and assets and so on. But then there's this whole other balance sheet that they never see and never incorporate, and that's like, oh, what's happening to the atmosphere? What's happening to the soils? What's happening to the oceans? You know, how do we live on this planet? Because we don't have another one. And I mean, I guess these are called externalities typically, right? In kind of climate discussions. And there's a lot of truth to that, those externalities. Like you and I, Dane, I think we are both very alarmed about the levels of pollution of this planet, which I don't ever hear environmentalists talking about the pollution, like the heavy metals going into the soil, or all the glyphosate and pesticides going into the crops, or even how the oceans, the marine ecosystems are being overrun by microplastics to the point where even the digestive systems of many of these creatures barely function at this point. And those plastics aren't going to go away anytime soon. It's like, well, this is a problem. And this is a fatal problem if we don't fix it. Your thoughts?
It is fatal. You brought up many important points. Let me back into that with the microplastics, which are part of climate engineering operations. Polymer fibers that are stated in patents as being used for the function of helping to keep the metal particulates aloft longer in the atmosphere. These are coating the sea surface. For example, in the eastern Pacific off the U.S. West Coast, when you have a sea surface that's coated not only with the decomposing plastics from all the waste that we dump in our oceans, but also the ubiquitous climate engineering fallout, that radically affects evaporation on the sea surface. Now you add the toxic solar radiation management canopy that blocks direct sunlight, which further thwarts evaporation, all of it adding to the cutting off of moisture from the U.S. West Coast. Any moisture that does try to form and migrate to the toward the east into the western U.S., that is blocked almost consistently with the ridiculously resilient ridge of high pressure. That's an ionosphere heater created dome of high pressure, rotates upper level winds clockwise around the western U.S. so nothing enters the western U.S. So by multiple means, the climate engineers can and are completely cutting off the flow of precipitation to the west. Much of that ends up in the east. Other crops are being flooded. Crops in Nigeria just got wiped out from massive flooding. So we have the drought deluge scenario that is the hallmark of climate intervention operations.
This is, you know, and just listening to you there, I know why I love interviewing you so much and why people love hearing this, because you pack so much information into such a short amount of time. You like your signal to noise ratio is super high. We cover a lot of ground here together. So I just want to compliment you on that. And
team effort. Next,
absolutely. Next question for you then is, so normally, let's talk about Hurricane Ian, or as you're saying, Ian. Normally in a hurricane, that would be a one-off event where a nation could recover, a nation could rebuild, because they have a supply chain that's functioning, because they have spare parts and they have spare labor and they have the ability to be resilient and redundant in repairing that area. But right now, today, with the total devastation of certain areas of Central Florida or Western Florida, it looks like an atomic bomb dropped on some of those small cities and so on. We don't have a supply chain that functions. So you can't even get a lot of the electrical parts. You can't get some of the plumbing parts and the polymers, maybe the piping. You can't get the lumber that you need, and you can't get the labor. And it doesn't matter how much money they print. If the government says, oh, here's $50 billion to repair your city, I still can't find the parts I need. Doesn't matter how much money you have if you can't find the parts. So now we're talking about storms that are occurring in the context of a globally weakened supply chain system. So now it becomes not just a little white swan. It's a black swan. Now it's a black monster swan. You see what I mean?
I do. And you're completely correct. Again, if people looked at this as a comparison with dominoes that are falling, each successive domino being bigger than the last for the reasons you cited, these what amounts to a feedback mechanism that feeds on itself at that point when there's no more supply chain and the restructuring can't happen, and that breaks down the system even further. Same thing is happening environmentally with back to the toxins you mentioned with the food that's needed for these people. We have now oceans that are so polluted and the die-off is so horrific that we have fisheries collapsing around the globe. In the case of farm salmon and so forth, for example, and I know you know how toxic they are, one of the most toxic foods you can eat in the world, but even the salmon farms are having mass die-off, 50,000 tons at a time. And people wonder why, what's wrong with our scientists? Why aren't they speaking out? And I know you know this more than anybody, that they are bought, sold, and paid for. I have been in the field with USDA scientists I know very well, and scientists from Cal Fire, entomologists, the top ones in the state, and all of them looking at me sheepishly as we're core drilling fir trees and testing for aluminum uptake, and they say, what do you want us to do about it? They know exactly what's going on, but they won't say a word. Same with people in agencies, same with elected officials in our region. They all know they won't say a word. They simply are going to pursue their own personal agendas, their paychecks, their pensions, until there's virtually nothing left. Where's honor? Where's morality? Where's virtue?
Well, and those who do attempt to speak out, they are immediately vilified, threatened. All their funding is cut. Their labs are shut down. For example, you know, I interviewed Dr. David Lewis, and the name of his book, Science for Sale. And, you know, he's the whistleblower from the EPA that talked about all the biosludge coming out of the sewage systems of every city in America, and this biosludge being spread on farms as fertilizer. Now, that's a suicide mission, as you well know. You can't take human sewage, collect everything that's flushed down the toilet in a city, and then just dump it on farms and call it fertilizer because it has nitrogen in it. I mean, that's beyond insane. And yet that's happening in America, in every city, every single city right now, today, every day.
Oh, it is. They're actually in a number of municipalities, they are now literally recycling the wastewater and putting it right back into the tap.
Oh, true. Yeah, especially in California. LA is doing that.
Exactly. And the desalinization plants are not a cure either, in that there's horrific damage happening from that. The fisheries in Chile have been wiped out from their desalinization plant. So there's the bottom line is we need to stop interfering with the planet's life support systems. Climate engineering, the single most destructive human activity of all, short of nuclear cataclysm. And we have an entire system of academia pretending it's not happening, pretending it's some proposal that we could, may, might do somewhere down the road while it's glaring in the skies above us. And we need populations to stand behind those of us, you, me, and others that are trying to bring these issues to light. We need everyone's help to circulate data and materials. And again, as we brought up on our last exchange, we offer our printed materials at less than our cost to try to get them into circulation. We have shirts now that are good conversation starters for people to get the door open. We're doing everything we know to do. I live, Mike, for bringing this issue to light. My mission in life is to see this issue exposed and everything else with it, all the work you've done over so many years. It will pull so many things to light. It would cause a shockwave around the world if populations knew what their governments have done to them without their knowledge, without their consent. Wouldn't they at that point take to the streets with their proverbial pitchforks and torches and start trying to hold legally and morally accountable anyone and everyone involved, from the media, so-called elected officials, the so-called science community? We have a system that is criminally corrupt, and we will all pay the price if we don't deal with it.
Well, that's the key point right there. We will all pay the price. You're absolutely correct, and I don't think this system can be self-correcting, or it would have already done so. I mean, we're so far past the tipping point, but in the last minute here to wrap this up, given that we are all going to pay some price for this, because it's sort of like we're all passengers on this train. And this train that's being driven by the, quote, the science has just driven off the edge of a broken bridge that's spanning a chasm, but the bridge is out and the train is in free fall. We're still in the train, like we haven't hit ground yet, so we're all weightless at the moment. We're like, whoa, where's this train going, right? And it's going to the bottom of the chasm. There's going to be a big explosion down there, but what can we do as individuals to ride this out and not die, basically?
Well, that analogy is completely on target. And what each of us need to do is, it's hard at the bottom of a very high mountain to think you could make that summit. And it feels the same to people now, that it feels like a journey that so far they don't even have the motivation to try. As the proverb goes, the journey of 1,000 miles begins with a single step. If each of us armed ourselves with credible data, and again, a picture's worth 1,000 words, but if you share that effectively and efficiently, data links from our sites, this interview, for example, we just posted our recording of the frequency transmissions that affected Hurricane Ian. But if we arm ourselves with credible data, we start a spot fire of awareness in our own circles. We ask those within those circles to do the same. And we stoke those fires until it expands. And those fires begin to merge and form a blaze that's too big for the power structure to put out. If we simply bring this to light, I would argue we could alter the flavor of what's about to happen. Collapse is a given at this point on so many fronts. But if we could stop the damage before Earth's life support systems are beyond any recovery, we could salvage something. And I would argue that's worth fighting for till our last breath. But it will take all of us.
Yeah, well said. And folks, one way that you can help spread this information is go to Dane's website, geoengineeringwatch.org. Get his materials. Get some of his you've got all kinds of swag there, you know, shirts and so on and things like that. And also a lot of documents that people can share everywhere. But spread the word. This is a red alert moment for humanity. If we don't pull together, we will lose not just this planet. I mean, we'll lose human civilization. We will be archaeology targets for whoever, whatever future entity comes along and wonders, like, what happened here? How did this get destroyed? Well, guess what? So, Dane, any final thoughts before we wrap this up?
Oh, I just want to express my gratitude to you, your followers, and again, that effort of simply expanding that circle of awareness that can be done with links from the website shared from a home computer for free and put in the lap of environmental groups, agricultural groups, farming groups. Give them the heads up to what's happening in our skies. And once you get your foot in the door, once you start a landslide of awakening within those organizations, again, those fires will spread. All of us can do that. We can do that for free from our own home computer. But that's how we start to turn this tide, Mike. And I know you know how urgent it is we do that.
And I have a feeling that as the famine really accelerates, there's going to be a lot of people starting to question who previously did not. You know, people who will say, well, gosh, if the science was so good, why are we all starving right now? Right? it's a moment of awareness that you can't ignore when your stomach is growling.
Exactly. That's a profound point that the so-called experts that were trained, taught, and programmed to believe, if they were anywhere close to being on target, we wouldn't be in this mess right now, would we? They do whatever they're told to do. They say whatever they're told to say. And the population needs to wake up to that fact. Science to the highest bidder. That's exactly what we have right now.
Yeah. Yeah. Crazy times. Well, thank you, Dane, for joining us. It's always an honor to have you on. I appreciate you especially joining me late in the evening. And I look forward to that video. We're gonna kind of embed that video that you're talking about into this interview so people can see it. But keep up the great work and, just keep spreading the word. Thank you so much.
Always an honor and a pleasure, Mike. Team effort.
All right. Take care then, Dane.
You too.